All right, benevolence and peace to you from God our Father and Christ Jesus our Lord. You're receiving Job chapter 2 today. No surprise to you, last week we gave you Job chapter 1, promised that we would be here in Job 2 today. There is much in Job 2 that we will not have to explain to you because much of it is the same as last week. But let us live Job 2. Some of you say, I am living Job 2 already. I have come under an attack of the enemy. Maybe you're aware of such. But Job 2, let us live it in the sense that we now follow the narrative and discover it as we read it. This is one of the benefits of your reading in English, a chapter in a translation that you have not become accustomed to hearing it in. You can be freshly impacted because you are not familiar with it. So let us discover Job 2, what is going on as we make our way through it. Just before we get into the text itself, you will remember that last week there was a day, that day, it's a particular day, that the sons of God, that is, the immediate creations of God, as to their very existence. We're not talking about being made a new creation. We're not talking about being born again. But those beings that owe their existence directly to God without any intermediate agency. That is, those who were not procreated, but those who were immediately created. Cherubim, seraphim, angelic orders, angels, demons, and one particular demonic one called the opponent, whom we have identified as Satan, or the Satan, as some would render it because of the presence of the definite article before the transliterated word that we're translating as opponent. He is there as well. You will remember that last time, on that day, may I point this out to you that I didn't point this out to you last week, God brought it up, right? Have you set your heart on my servant Job? The opponent, Job's opponent, God's opponent, our opponent as well, tells him that the only reason that God is served by Job is because Job is taken care of by God. And if God were to remove the blessings as humans count them from Job, Job would utterly blaspheme him, God, to his face. So God allows this trial of Job. Satan goes out and takes away everything that he owns, including everyone that he is related to, other than his wife, as we said last week, because she was more valuable. And I mean this not as a joke. I mean this in all seriousness. His wife was more valuable toward the destruction of Job alive than if she were dead. He could not use the grief of the loss of his wife as effectively in the spiritual downfall of Job as if he kept her alive to be used as his mouthpiece in his life. Whenever I talk about Job's wife, my wife always tells me not to be so hard on her. She lost all of her children, too. Okay, and this has been my response over the years. If she lost all of her children and all of her wealth, too, then she should respond just like Job did, too, right? But she doesn't. I will lovingly and respectfully not take the counsel of my wife on this. This woman's going to look much worse today than she did last week, all right? And not letting her off the hook today. So she's kept alive. All of his children are dead. Job does not sin in his words. The easiest way to sin. The easiest way to sin is in what you say. He didn't do that. He maintains his integrity. And so he passes the first phase of his satanic examination. Not that Satan is the one testing him for approval, but for destruction. He passes that with the proverbial flying colors. All right, so we return to him now in chapter 2, verse 1. And there was the day that the sons of God entered to present themselves before Yahweh. It's another one of those days. I think these days happen with some regularity. I don't know that they happen so frequently, but these days happen. I think they still happen. This is our indication of it, that they happen. There was that day, but now here's another day. It's the day that the sons of God entered to present themselves before Yahweh. Also, the opponent was among them to present himself before Yahweh. And Yahweh said to the opponent, "Where from this are you entering?" Now, that's a very literal rendering of what he said. It's not the smoothest as far as what we're used to reading, "Where from this?" But that's exactly how it's said. Not the exact wording as the way it was said the last time in chapter 1. And the opponent answered Yahweh and said, "From moving to and fro in the earth and from walking back and forth in it." Same thing he answered the last time. And Yahweh said to the opponent, "Have you set your heart on my servant Job? Because there is no one just like him in the earth. A man unimpaired and upright, fearing God and turning aside from evil." Now that's what God had said the last time. So far this is very similar. Here's where God says something in addition, because he has something additional to say about Job because of what has transpired since the last time. And still, he is gripping on to his unimpairedness. "And you incited me against him to swallow him up for nothing." That is, there wasn't anything of sin that Job had done to deserve this onslaught that was allowed of the devil to be imposed upon him. Think of this language with me. "And still, he is gripping on to his unimpairedness." Still. Now, that's going to be very important later when you see something that Job's wife will say to him. Do you note the language of God? Still, he is gripping on. All right? I've certainly told this to our Hebrew class before, but never told you about. I think I may have told you this once in explaining this same word or one of its cognates in the past. But this word for gripping on, all right, when I was learning Hebrew vocabulary, I was trying to, when you learn anything, you do this with whatever you're learning lots of times. You come up with these mnemonics, things that you can connect something to remember it by. And this word is the Hebrew word chazak, all right? Chazak. It's one of the words that means to be strong. It gets translated that way, to be strong. And I connected it with Zach Morrow. I said, Chazak. It actually means to be, I translate it usually to be tough. But there is this sense in which it is used that you are strongly grabbing something. Sometimes in our conventional translations, it gets translated as take hold of or to seize something. It's not just like you're holding it, you're grabbing it, all right? This is an ongoing action of this strong holding on to. So I'm translating it gripping. He is still gripping on to his unimpairedness. Do you ever do this? You know the armchair quarterbacks of our world. I don't put much stock in what they say. I talked about some of them a couple weeks ago, right? But you know, I don't watch this. I don't really like this. But when my kids were growing up, for some reason there was on this one channel they used to have bull riding. Used to come on this channel. My son growing up, now I tell you, he has a strange sense of humor. If I mean this. But this is one of the things. He just loved watching that bull riding because he loved to laugh at these guys getting killed by this bull. I mean, as he would see these guys, you know, like multiple whiplash happening, and then finally the bull wins, throws this guy off, and turns around and starts charging at him, and seeing this guy run away from this accord, and just found that hilarious. To watch these guys. If somebody got stomped on by the bull, that was particularly funny, I remember. That was just, that merited, you know, just many minutes of just unbounded laughter. Have you ever watched these guys, like, they got to hang on, even if it's not bull riding, it's the horses that they're trying to. When I look at it, I think, what's so hard about that? You put all of your strength into gripping that horn on the saddle, and then contract your adductor muscles in your legs and grip onto that thing. And so with your legs in your hand, hold on to that thing and just be tenacious and just say, no, I'm not flying off of you, animal. It looks to me like, what is so hard about that? Now, I'm sure that if I had to do it, it would be a whole different story. I'm sure that just like, this is what's so hard about it. But think of this thing. I got a ride here called the spiritual life, and there is challenge to that spiritual life, right? I mean, serious challenge to that spiritual life. My job is to grip on to what here is called unimpairedness. Some of us have a harder road to hoe. Some of us have a more strenuous challenge than others. As a pastor, I am stricken by the creativity either of just life, if we may personify it, or the enemy, this opponent, as to how imaginative trials are. If I were to say to you, okay, I've got the what people think I have, right? I've got the pastoral crystal ball here in the pulpit. I can see things you can't see. And you know, in 5 years, I don't know the nature of it, but I know that I've been told, you know, my hotline to God tells me, God is this, the angels have told me that in 5 years, you individual are going to undergo a particular kind of trial that is designed to rock your life. If I could tell you that, I can almost guarantee you that as you think about what it would be, you're not going to get it correctly. You're not going to get it right. I can almost guarantee you that you will not even be in the ballpark. You won't even be in the realm. You'll think, I'll be tried this way, and then you're ready for that, right? To be forewarned is to be forearmed, as the saying goes, and for that very reason, the very fact that you can expect it and prepare for it, that's the reason it probably won't come that way. If it is something of satanic attack, demonic assault, if it is really spiritual warfare, and that's what we're talking about today because you can see it here, right? In other words, the problems that Job goes through, they aren't the kind of problems that he made for himself. He didn't make wrong decisions and now he's reaping it. That's not why this is happening. Though that's real, that's not why this is happening. It's not just because God wants to test him so that he can reward him in life and decorate him at the Bema. It's not something that is his faith is in 1 Peter chapter 1. It's not designed so that the trying of your faith, though this may be an outcome of it, it's not designed so that the trial of your faith, much more precious than gold, can be unto praise and honor and glory at the revelation of our Lord Jesus Christ that is coming. That's not the reason for it that's given here. It's not because, other people have done this and I'm living in a fallen world. It's not just because Christians aren't exempt from things like germs and bacteria or viruses, and it's nothing. It may try you, but it's not designed even as a trial. There's all kinds of reasons that this is happening, that we go through different things. But we're seeing why he's going through what he's going through, and we can call it a frontal confrontation with the demonic. We can even say the satanic, because the Satan, the opponent, is the one who is the direct means, that he's the player that's making this happen. We know that this is not a situation where he is suffering, as Paul would speak of in Colossians 1, for the body's sake. We know that this is not happening, though the body gets great benefit out of it, we're getting benefit out of it. We're getting sound truth that we can apply so as not to fall. A lot of times God makes all these kinds of good come out of it, though it wasn't the primary reason for it. It's not 2 Corinthians 1. It's not so that I can help somebody else who goes through the same thing. That may happen, but that wasn't the reason. And so you see, there's multiple reasons for things sometimes. And while the opponent designs it for this, the Savior has designed it for that. An absolutely different reason. Absolutely opposite reason. We don't find this word here because we're dealing with Hebrew, but I'll tell you about a Greek word that this relates to very much. Pyrosmos is the Greek word. That's the noun that gets translated two different ways, and I submit to you it needs to be translated two different ways. I translate it two different ways. The context tells us what the nature of a pyrosmos is. Pyrosmos gets translated as test, and it gets translated as tempt. And it says something about the fact that the same word can be used for both of those things. It tells us something about the varying nature of these situations that we find to be either testing or tempting. When when you see God test, you see God test, it's the word dakeo. I'm sorry, not dakeo. What is that word? Come on, if you know. Dokimazo. When God tests, it's dokimazo, and that is, by definition, to test something with a view to approval. In other words, we're going to put you through this test. God's putting you through this test, and we could say that his attitude is, and I want you to pass it. I want you to win. I want to put on you, to liken it to things Americana, I want you to win so that when, because you may get injured in this, I can give you the heavenly purple heart. Hey, you sustained some real hurt in the midst of this war. No, then you get the purple heart. I want you to get the Congressional Medal of Honor here. I want you to pass this. When it's the devil doing it, and it gets translated as temptation, it is pyrosmos that also means to test. But it's in his hands, it's testing with a view to disapproval. Like, I want you to fall apart over this. I'm throwing this test at you so as to solicit you toward evil. The devil could say, I'm out for your spiritual destruction. And you know what? Because he's utterly malevolent, he'll take any other kind of destruction too. If he can destroy your marriage along the way, if he can destroy your health along the way, if he can destroy relationships along the way, it's all the better. He is all about destruction, okay? He's all about destruction. The Lord is all about upbuilding. The Lord is all about construction. The Lord is all about building you up in your soul. Sometimes that happens by tests. But we know, reading the first two chapters, what Job didn't. We know exactly what's going on. Listen, some of you have come here this morning under a weight of some kind of burden. And some of you are like me, it's difficult to mask that. Others of you are real great poker players and we wouldn't know. But you come this morning like, oh, woe is me and it's just this way. No, it's not just this way. My wife asked me at times, is there a reason you did this? And my answer sometimes is, there's a reason for everything. There's always a reason, right? There is a reason, and I mean it, there's a reason for everything. It may not be the reason you want, but there's a reason for it. Nothing happens just, there's no spontaneous generation in this Christian way of life. There's something triggered. There's a cause and effect here. Now, when you go through things in life and it is hard as nails, there's a reason. You may not know what that reason is, but one of the reasons may be this one. You don't have to be Job to be a recipient of this reason, you understand. You don't have to be the person, the single greatest believer on the earth. Satan doesn't just go after the single greatest believers on the earth. We, in Ephesians 6, fight against principalities and powers, spiritual wickedness in high places, the world rulers of the darkness of this age. We do. We Christians do that. The world, especially maybe the pseudo-intellectual academic world at the School of Tyrannus here, they will hear talk like this, And they will say, oh, in patronizing language, those poor, primitive thinking, superstitious people that, you know, believe that there are these nefarious beings called demons in the world, and they ascribe things that happen to them that they don't like to demons. I understand why they don't understand this, because they already got them. They don't. They can just coast. They are no threat. If you're a believer, you know that there are demons and that they are real, don't you? If you don't, well, hang on to the whatever that thing is called on the saddle for a while. Your day is coming. Nobody's exempt from this. This is what we deal with. The one who is in us, Yahweh in the passage, is far greater than the one who is in the world, the opponent. So we've got everything we need, nothing to despair about, nothing to get afraid of. We've got it all ahead of time. We just don't know what shape that's going to take. And so Job was still, after this first battery, I don't even know if we want to call it the first phase. Do we want to call it the first four phases? Because he got four things in that overload principle, one right after the other. After all of that's done, he's still gripping on to his integrity, like, you're not going to take this away. All right? We were at the tent of God. It was Zoe and I. We were at the tent, and Phil Burt came by, and her kids stayed with us as they went into the, as she went and did some shopping. And so we were with the kids, and I played this thing with them. I said, okay, try to open my fist. Okay, it's some pseudo-macho thing that some guys like me will do. All right, try to open my fist. There's the game, okay? And James and Bright were giving it everything they had to try to pry my fingers open. And I'm giving it everything I have to maintain my pride. And you're not going to do the two little kids open it, all right? That kind of everything I got, all right? Sometimes that's what it feels like in the Christian way of life when you are gripping onto maybe even not your unimpairedness, but your Christward pursuit, the degree of holiness that you have achieved and the degree to which you want to be successful in. It's an effort, and I understand it. Oh, do I understand it? I've been a believer for 39 years. I've been a pastor for 30. I can't tell you most of my trials because houses burning down and accidents maintained and loss of finances and whatever, these things are nothing because they're things of the earth. I can't usually tell you about my trials because my trials deal with the things that really matter to me, and that's people, and I can't uncover people to you. You have to know that I understand what you deal with. You have to know. As a leader, I'm going to get it worse. You've got to know. You think you've been tempted and you think I'm Iron Man, I'm impervious to this or something. It's just the opposite. I'm going to get tempted with it more. They know if I'm not the shepherd, all right, but I'm a shepherd, they know they can take me out. There's a good chance that we can dissolve this place. And I don't mean any kind of sense of inflated importance at all. You can also stay together and you can also be fantastic in the Christian walk and you don't need me ultimately. But my point is, you know, I understand this. Now, a good deal of this, these things that are thrown at us, that in the way the language here is that enter to us. These are demonic things that God is totally up to, and he can make me totally up to, But understand that that's there. It is to us to grip onto, like, I'm not letting go of my unimpairedness, okay? I'm not saying me, I'm just talking as a general believer. Don't let go. You can use two hands. Don't let go. And the opponent, verse 4, answered Yahweh and said, skin in place of skin. Now, I planned initially to talk much more about that, but then I said, why should I talk so much about the words of Satan here? Let's just dispense with this. Skin in place of skin. Like, a man will endure certain problems skin-wise so as to protect his skin ultimately. And that's his idea. Like, let's talk about his skin. He may deal with anything so as to preserve his soul, and soul in the sense of death here. You'll see that language here. And all that belongs to a man, he will give in place of his soul. That is, if you let me hit his body, his skin, I will give you his soul. He'll forfeit his soul in the sense that he will seek to preserve his soul, and he'll lose it. To kind of think of New Testament language, skin in place of skin. You might even think of it like this, as sort of a, because these parties in this conversation know about this. They don't need the New Testament. You understand, though we learn about it in the New Testament. Maybe talk like this, like skin instead of flesh. So flesh in place of flesh. You give me his flesh. You let me assault the flesh, and I'll give you his flesh back. You'll see flesh come out of this guy if you let me hit his flesh. You give me flesh, I'll give you flesh back. You understand what I'm saying? Like used in as a double entendre for flesh. You give me his flesh, literal, I'll give you his old sin nature. You'll see his old sin nature come out like gangbusters if you let me hit his body. However, verse 5, please, send your hand and touch to his bone and to his flesh if he won't utterly blaspheme you to your face. And Yahweh said to the opponent, behold, he is in your hand. Only keep his soul. That means only don't, you can't kill him. All right, you can't take his soul out of his skin. Can't take his soul out of his body or his flesh. Keep his soul. And the opponent exited from the face of Yahweh. And he struck Job with evil boils from the sole of his foot unto the crown of his head. Evil boils. And he took for himself earthenware to scratch himself with it. You know, so he took parts. He took pieces of pottery that were broken. He took what's called a potsherd. To scratch himself with it. And he was sitting in the midst of the ashes. Some of you have heard me speak about our brother David Peng. Some of you have met David. It's time to sign up for the Northeast Christian Conference again, those of you who will want to go from this. That's where we've seen and met our brother David Peng. What you don't know about David, maybe, even if you met him, is that he is a dermatologist by profession. And so studying this word for boils, how shall I translate this? The Bible gives me a much greater education than anything I've ever had in my life. It throws me into so many fields as to how to translate things. I have to study snakes and skin diseases and astronomy and all kinds of things because the Bible talks about it. I sent an email to David and I asked him, I said, I'm studying Job. As a dermatologist, have you given any thought to like what this was that actually, was there a certain disease? Was it just like a satanic invention? Or is there a disease that fits these symptoms as you read throughout Job? He informed me that there is, in medicine, particularly dermatology, there is actually a disease that is called Job syndrome. Because boils break out all over the body, and he said it's because of a bacteria that makes the skin unable to ward off infection, and called Job syndrome. Job breaks out all over his skin, and I hear that skin, when your skin gets attacked, it's some of the most painful things to deal with. He was sitting in the midst of the ashes, and as a sign of his grief, and his wife said to him, now watch this. His wife said to him, what his wife does, what she says to him, unbeknownst to her, is she almost verbatim quotes God in his commendation of Job, and then does verbatim quote Satan as to what she wants him to do. Do you see it? Still you're gripping on to your unimpairedness. That's like God just said that. I think God said that because he knew she would say this. She certainly doesn't know that God said this, but God knows that she would say this. She says, you're still doing it in language that's very strange. It's not your normal way of saying that, right? You're still gripping on to your unimpairedness. What's the point? Have you ever felt that way? That's a blasphemous thing to say. What's the point? Because this doesn't benefit me at all trying to serve God. That's what Satan's argument was. That the only reason that it counts to serve God is if you get what you call good from him. So still you hold on to your unimpairedness. And then she encourages him to do the point, the reason that Satan wanted this to happen in the first place. Utterly blaspheme God, she adds, and die. Like, here's the way out of this. If you utterly blaspheme God, maybe God will kill you. And then it'll put an end to your suffering. Now, in the Septuagint, I hinted at this earlier last week, I told you about it. In the Septuagint, which is, and I give you this for what it's worth, but it might be worth a lot to you. In the Septuagint, that is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Scriptures made in the mid-3rd century B.C. Translating from manuscripts that are far more ancient, not just a little, but far more ancient than the ones that we translate the Old Testament from, the Hebrew that we translate from today. Here's what it says in the Septuagint. There's significantly more there. She says, how long will you hold out, saying, behold, I wait yet a little while, expecting the hope of my deliverance? For behold, your memorial is abolished from the earth, even your sons and daughters, the pangs and pains of my womb, which I bore in vain with sorrows. What's she saying so far? There's a lot. There's more. All right, but what is she saying so far? How long are you going to hold out? Do you ever feel like this? I come to church, and this is what this is turning into, is that I hear this all the time, that Timothy will get up there and just like tell me to hold out, tell me to stay on board a little longer. Like it's just like it's another pep rally for Timothy to tell me to don't quit yet. Yeah, I am saying that. I will admit I say that to you. I say that kind of thing to you. But she said, still, like, you still want to do this? Behold, yet that you think like this deliverance is coming. Behold, I wait a little while expecting the hope of my deliverance. For behold, your memorial is abolished from the earth. What's his memorial? Even your sons and daughters. That is, these are the people that carry on your name. The pangs and pains of my womb, which I bore in vain with sorrows. I gave birth to 10 kids. Do you know what childbirth is like? No, you don't, Job, do you? I gave birth to these children in pain for nothing, because they're all wiped out now. And you yourself sit down to spend the nights in the open air among the corruption of worms.
Why are you still holding out your integrity? God's not good enough for you to serve Him. You sit on an ash heap. There's worms in the ash heap. What kind of state is this? What kind of God is this to serve? Does He deserve to be served by you? No, we're not letting Mrs. Job off the hook. Especially in the Septuagint we are. Here, then she says, "And I am a wanderer and a servant from place to place and house to house, waiting for the setting of the sun, that I may rest from my labors and my pangs which now beset me." We've been financially wiped out. And you're disabled. You can't do anything. So I've had to go out and get a job, and all day I work and I serve, and I just can't. I just think about coming home and resting from my labors. But curse the Lord and die. All right, that's what she says in the Septuagintal rendering of this passage. And verse 10, as you go back to your translation, he said to her, "You speak as one of the impious women are wont to speak." You read in your conventional translations, "You speak as one of the foolish women speak." Walking my dog the other day, and I was thinking about this. I knew I was going to be teaching this, but I hadn't translated it yet. And I said, "Foolish women." Now, I know that could be, she could be a woman who's a kasil, a dullard. You speak as a dullard speaks. That could be an awil in Hebrew. You speak as a misosophist, a hater of wisdom would speak. You could speak as the kind of thing that gets translated fool sometime as the one that's spiritually stupid, as how I translated. And then I knew that there was Nabal. You know, Abigail's husband, Nabal, you read it in the ball, or Nabal. She says of him, when she's talking about him to David, she says, "Nabal is his name, and Nabalah is with him." That is, an impious person. Impious is his name, and impiety is with him. And as I was thinking, not having translated this yet, I thought, I'll bet that's Nabal. And it was. He's not saying, "You speak as somebody that just kind of doesn't get it." He's not saying, that's the kasil. He's not saying, "You speak as somebody who just hates wisdom." You're fine with wisdom as long as everything's going well. He's not saying, "You're just spiritually stupid. Like, you don't listen to doctrine." That all of those, in some sense, you could say that. But I think he's saying, and I was right here, that's because I've translated it now. He's saying, "You speak like somebody impious. You speak like an impious person. You speak like an imp or an impus." No, don't look that up. I just made the word impus up, okay? So you won't find that anywhere. It's not my vocabulary skill. It's just my making up a word. "You speak like the impious women," and it's feminine. "So you speak as one of the impious women are wont to speak." And then this is part of his reasoning and his rhetoric. Rhetoric isn't always wrong. He says, "Also, we accept good from God." You have no problem with that, right? All of our lives here. You are married to the richest guy in the world, maybe the king of Edom. You didn't have any problem with that when that came from God. You had no problem with that, right? No problem with that. We accept good from God. And the evil we won't accept? Like, you have the right or you have the ability not to accept. Like, "I'm not going to accept this. I will not accept this." Well, what choice do you have? You're not going to accept it. You're just going to show your dislike and distaste toward God because you got something that you don't think is pleasant now. In all this, Job didn't sin with his lips. Answering his wife that way was not sinning with his lips. And the neighbors of Job, in verse 11, heard of this evil that had entered upon him. How long is he living under this? Well, without any TV, internet, newspapers, postal system, whatever, it's enough time that neighbors can have that information travel to them where they are and for them to travel to where he is. This didn't last for a week. And then there's the week that they're going to sit with him. Watch. And they entered a man from his place, Eliphaz the Temanite. Definitely we are in Edomite territory now. Teman in places that speak about Edom, like in Obadiah and in Jeremiah. They talk about Edom under the name Teman all the time. It's like citing as a synecdoche the word Teman instead of all of Edom. And Bildad the Shuhite from a place in Edom. And Zophar the Naamathite. These three guys. And they made an appointment together to enter, to empathize with him, and to comfort him. So they want to share in his plight and to minister comfort to him. Later on, Job is going to say, "Miserable comforters are you all." Like, you didn't meet the criteria. You didn't hit the target. If you came to comfort me, this is not happening. And they lifted their eyes from at a distance, and they didn't recognize him. So as they're coming, they're seeing there's a pile of ashes over there, and there's a guy sitting on the ashes there. Poor guy. And they're just going to keep riding by to go to Job's house. They didn't recognize him. He's covered with these sores, maybe ulcers. And they lifted their voices and wept. Before we start slamming these guys on Fridays, they actually do have some compassion enough for him to make them weep for their friend. And each ripped his tunic and flung dust on their heads toward the heavens. These are all ancient ways and cultural ways, actually, of expressing grief. And they sat beside him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and there was no speaking a word to him, because they saw that the pain was very great. I'll give them this. Over at the Harvest Fest, Jason did a encouragement, an exhortation, a devotional kind of word. And he talked about as coming and wanting to be with him was admirable. And until they opened their mouths, you know, coming and being with him and saying nothing, just being with him, that was, let's credit them with this. When they open their mouths, this thing all goes south. But there was no speaking word to him because they saw that the pain was very great. I'm amazed, though, that they actually could do this for 7 days, because there's this thing in humanity that says you should say something now. Especially, you traveled all this distance, and for 7 days of silence, there's that pressure to say something. But what if there's nothing to say? What if you just can't actually say anything? All right, we actually started going through the words of these guys. It starts with Job. We started it on Friday. We did three before we did two. Just did it a couple days ago. And we'll be seeing the wrong way to interpret life. Sound doctrine in a negative image. That is, we've got to take what we see them say and invert it. We've got to say God's not standing behind the gist of what they were saying. James will tell us, if we catapult to the end of the book and then into the New Testament as well, and say, you have heard of the endurance of Job, sort of as a Jacobite summary. You have seen the perseverance of Job. You've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end of the Lord, that he is very gracious. What we have in front of us, we don't see the end of the Lord yet.
I'm going to tell you that the end of the Lord is very gracious. I don't care how it ends on the earth. For the believer, the end of the earth, the end of the Lord, that is the end that the Lord brings it to, is very gracious. It's very compassionate. But what's in front of me today is the attack. And so I'm dealing with the attack. If we went to the end of the book, we'd have much, I could tell you, much as far as the things that Job says he doesn't have, that is some what we might call a light at the end of the tunnel, so that I might extend my soul. You'll see that he'll say, I don't have any hope that I might stretch my soul toward that. Well, we actually do. We do have expectation that we can stretch our souls toward such. But today we're dealing with the attack. Now, I've allotted myself 10 minutes, and I started 51 minutes ago here. So I'm going to make it 9. In an hour, I'll be done. In 9 minutes I'll be done, but I'll be done with the whole thing here in an hour. I'm going to allow myself 9 minutes for what I'm going to tell you. And I'm going to speak frankly with you. I have no notes, and I'm going to be prudent and say what I should not say. Say what I should say and what I shouldn't say, I will not say. But listen, I wanted to talk with you very personally. I thought of devoting a whole message to this. And I thought, no, I'll just give it 10 minutes at the end of this one. I think some of you are beginning to tire of my speaking this way. But it's terribly important. Don't actually look around, but as I look around, look at all of the happy faces here. Look at all the happy faces. And I'm not seeing too many happy faces. I don't know that you take me seriously. I really don't know that you take me seriously. The majority of us, I don't think that the majority of us take me seriously. When I say that for the last about 2.5 years, our church has been under a corporate satanic attack like this, I understand how you might not take me seriously, because you don't see everything that I see, because you're not privy to it. I have identified, I will not tell you what it is, I have identified what I want to call a spirit of, and then there is a certain sin that is attacking a certain demographic of our assembly. That is, if you are part of this demographic, this particular sin, you are pressured toward it. I'll tell you the demographic. I might tell you what it is if you're part of that demographic. But I don't deem it prudent to speak about it so publicly. Women in our assembly are pressured toward a certain sin in an uncanny degree. Most of you aren't aware that the others of you are grappling with it. I'm the one that's aware. You tell me about it. All right? I believe that it is a demonically administered pressure upon the women of our church to a certain sin. Okay? Outside of that, some of you guys have gotten hit like nobody's business, all right? You've gotten hit mentally. You've gotten hit emotionally. There are distresses that have the flair of imagination and creativity to it that just like, what? You deal with that. And it has
And I want you now, you can see this if you open your eyes to this. I don't have to tell you the specifics of it, okay? Because it wouldn't be proper to speak about the specifics. You know why? Because we're a very small assembly, and you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. But I want you to think about it. I want you to think about it. There aren't people here now, right, that used to be here and used to be, we can't say they're pillars or anything, but used to be like all the time, right, regularly. Like this person's like all about church. They're not here at all anymore. What has happened? Maybe you don't know what's happened. Maybe you should know what's happened. You're not going to hear it from me. But the idea is, listen, I mean, this is real. And I deal with it daily. Fridays and Saturdays are horrible. And whatever I've told you about how I don't work on Saturday, I try to make that, it is the Sabbath, and I don't really do much work. Forget that. That's never, even when I said it, that never happened. Saturday is like, I dread Saturday. Because you guys don't work. And so you get tempted like crazy. And stuff happens. I just wait for Saturday. What kind of crises am I going to be dealing with on Saturdays? Why does that happen? Does anybody else talk like that? I don't know any other pastor that talks like that. Listen, this assembly has been under a demonic attack for the last 2.5 years. 2.5 years. Pushing 3. We distributed to you, and I want you to think about this. Don't let this fall on deaf ears. I've distributed to you the latest phone list. Somehow Sean keeps avoiding it. Leslie, don't let him get out of it. You get him on that phone list. Somehow Sean has avoided this, but this is the latest phone list. Had it printed up. What I'd like you to do, you don't have to do it just this way. But help me out here. All right, watch. If you took different colors of pens, you might do this, but you know, I'm not saying you have to do it. But you took and underline the names on there. And don't just go with the big family titles, okay? Look at the kids. Look at who's in there. And think and underline that I haven't seen this person in church for some time. That's usually an indicator of something. Maybe you want to reach out to that person. Maybe you want to let them know that you love them. Maybe you want to strengthen that person. Maybe you take a red pen and you say, I know there are problems here with the ones that I've underlined in red. I know what some of them are. Maybe you want to take a green pen and say, I don't know of anything wrong here. Oh, those are the people that don't get ministered to. Those are the people that everybody thinks are fine. Those are the people that could be going through proverbial hell and high water, but nobody's going to invest in them. Nobody's going to reach out to them because they're Matt and Christine. All right? There's no problem there. All right? And consider one another so that we can love each other in deed and truth and help each other reciprocally, mutually, as we go through things that we know nothing about in relation to the other person. People that you don't think, I mean, like you wouldn't think. I mean, every time I come, Sister so-and-so is, she's always smiling, she's always happy. Sister may be broken. Sister may be hurting, all right? Timothy may be the only one that knows that Sister is broken and hurting. I want us to kind of take a turn, a sort of ministry turn, right on time. I want to take a certain ministry turn and say, it's time for us to take this agape thing and like really let's kick in. Let's click. Let's start kicking into gear in significant ministry investment in the lives of our fellow Lord Jesus Christ assembly members so that we can help them and they don't become casualties in this spiritual war like some of us have.
All right, I will be quite transparent and frank with you here. I feel overwhelmed because how can I possibly, in a significant, in a tangible, in a demonstrable way, minister to everyone that is dealing with it when I'm the only guy that knows in every situation? We are, this is actually a very encouraging thing. It must mean that we pose some kind of threat to the kingdom of darkness, right? Play church assemblies. They're just going to play church every week. What's Satan have to deal with that? You think you're alone? You're not alone. There's two couples here. I call them doppelgangers. Okay? I'll meet with this couple. Everything they're telling me, I'll meet with the next couple. It sounds like, did you get together? I want to say, is this a test? Do you want to see if I fit the qualifications that I'm not double-tongued like a pastor's supposed to be? Are you testing me so you say exactly the same words as this person said? To see if I'll answer you the same way, if I'm partial? I'm telling you, it's uncanny. Now, if I didn't say that, these two couples don't know anything about that anybody else is suffering in the same way, but they're suffering almost week by week, dealing with the same things and saying things verbatim to me, word for word. I'm done. Okay, I'm done with telling you this, but take me seriously. So many of us are under serious trial. I do think it demonic. Let so many Jobs get together. See those names. Take those names. Think about those names. Reach out to those names. Minister to those names. Invest in those names. Love those names. It's my exhortation to you from what we've seen today in the book of Job. All right. Now, but just before I leave, this is pragmatic, right? Pragmatics. Real fast platform meeting because we've got to go to the baptism at Tulik. I'll say real fast platform meeting for those who are hosts of Friday nights. And secondly, we thought we'd have other candidates here, but Haley is in the spotlight today. Haley's being baptized at Tulik today, so come out and just be there because today Haley enters the war that we've been talking about for real. Hey, I sign up as a disciple of the Lord Jesus Christ, and you sign up as a target, okay? So let her know by your presence when stuff goes wrong, I'm with you, okay? Baptism is I love baptism. It's a fantastic thing. The one having ears to hear, let him hear.